It's clear to me that the regulators are bringing out the big guns here, and are making absolutely clear that banks are going to survive and that there's no need to panic. I think I heard that message. I think depositors across the country heard that message, but we really just have to wait and see.
That was Todd Phillips, former attorney with the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation in the U.S., reacting to the move by the Biden government to essentially move in, swoop in, as some are characterizing it, and offer support to those who had invested in Silicon Valley after that bank collapsed. So millionaire investors, depositors will get all of their money back, courtesy of a U.S. government agency. What does this mean, though? It's a bit alarming, something we haven't seen for years in the U.S. To get some analysis of what it means down there and what it might mean for us up here. Moshe Lander is on the line, economist and senior lecturer in economics at Concordia University. Good morning to you.
Hello.
I mean, when you heard this announcement, what were your first thoughts? First of all, not the reaction to what the Biden government did, but just in reaction to the bank collapsing. When you first heard that, did you think, oh my goodness, here we go? Or did you think it was something isolated?
I thought it was isolated, but I'll be honest with you, and I think a lot of economists would probably say the same thing, which was when I heard the news, my first act was to Google. What is this bank? Because it's not one of the big ones. And so that was reassuring that the fact that I hadn't heard of this bank was a good sign that, we're not talking about Wells Fargo or Bank of America, and certainly not any of the big banks here in Canada.
Well, Silicon Valley Bank is the name, and immediately that makes you think of a certain type of business and industry. It did cater to startups in particular, right? People who are trying to get their businesses underway.
Yeah, and so inherently that's going to be a riskier bank than your traditional sort of loans that most banks would make, right? Most banks, their biggest asset is lending, say, through mortgages, and if not mortgages, then it's going to be through the garden variety sort of stuff, lines of credit, car loans, student loans, even on the spectrum of riskiness, funding an internet startup is way up there compared to even mortgages, even in today's nasty sort of housing market.
So we hear the announcement. There's a little bit of panic from obviously people who are involved with the bank directly, from investors generally, more so down in the States maybe than here. And then this move by the Joe Biden government this week. What does that mean? Explain to us what the U.S. government actually did in bailing out the bank.
So they didn't bail them out. And I'm glad you used that phrase because that's the phrase that's going to be thrown around, especially if you want to throw mud at the Biden administration. I'm not saying that you are, but that's the phrase that you'll hear. It wasn't a bailout. Banks generally are required to take out deposit insurance, much in the same way that you and I might take out health insurance, auto insurance, homeowners insurance. And so in the inevitability that something goes wrong, the insurance policy is supposed to kick in and pay out. So in the case of a bank, their biggest liability are deposits. From our standpoint, deposits are our assets, but for them, it's a liability. And so when the assets for them, which are the loans, start to go bad, then they are going to be unable to pay back their debts. And so the whole point of deposit insurance is that it kicks in and it makes sure that the depositors are covered. That's not a bailout. That's just having an insurance policy. Now, some banks choose to opt out, and usually that's because deposit insurance comes with a limit, much like auto insurance comes with a limit. But in that particular case, the amount that's going to be covered is sufficient to meet most of the depositors' needs.
So there would have been a relief on the part of investors or those who had deposited money with the bank that in fact the insurance was in place and the system was kicking in and they were going to be covered essentially.
Correct. And that's why the president yesterday at his press conference was saying that no taxpayer dollars are going to be used in this. If anything, if you have a cynical view of how the banks finance their deposit insurance premiums, you could say that they collect it from their depositors in the form of like high service charges and things like that. And fine, that might be true. But in that case, then it's the depositors with the bank that are paying for the deposit insurance that's paying them back for the money that they might have stood to lose without it. So It's a system that exists here in Canada. It's designed specifically to make sure that taxpayers are not on the hook. And so that makes it slightly different than the bailouts that did exist in 2008.
Okay. So is this a cautionary tale? And if so, for whom? Who should be concerned or worried going forward in terms of investment, in terms of dealing with the banks? Or should we just kind of relax and carry on, no harm done?
I think that we should relax, but I think it is a cautionary note, right? That banks fundamentally will take deposits and turn them into loans. And those loans are long-term in nature and the deposits are short-term in nature. So you have this fundamental mismatch on a bank's balance sheet that its assets and liabilities don't line up in terms of time. And so in the event that depositors start to pull their cash for whatever reason, whether it's justified or speculative, banks usually don't hold enough of a cushion to meet those depositary needs. And so there is always the risk that you could find yourself in a situation where this could happen. But again, deposit insurance is there to try and prevent this from spreading from one bank to another and precipitating a bank panic. But if a bank run were to happen, you know, the government could jump in if they wanted and capitalize the bank to get them through that liquidity issue. And then on the other side, just collect that back with interest. So, you know, the good news, at least for Canada, is that most of our deposits are tied up in six big banks. And so it's a lot easier for regulators in this country to keep an eye on six banks than 6,000 banks in the U.S.
Those big banks making the big money. What's the correlation between this and this kind of news and the impact on the stock market? Because immediately you hear this and you talk to people, say, oh, I'm just invested. Maybe it wasn't a good time. I shouldn't have. Did we see the kind of reaction that we thought we might, or no?
Yeah, I think until you get those reassuring noises that everything's going to be fine and that this is just an isolated incident rather than some sort of systemic risk that's within the banking system, you're right to look suspiciously at banks and just say, all right, are you next or are you tied up in this? Remember, at the beginning of 2008, it was described as just an isolated incident when one of the early banks collapsed, and it turned out that it was anything but isolated. So there's nothing wrong with taking that cautionary approach or cautious approach to bank stocks for now. But once we start to hear from the governor of the Bank of Canada, from the finance minister, from the heads of the big six banks, and they say, don't worry about it, we looked into it and we're good here in Canada. And even if something were to happen, we have protocols in place to protect these banks and to protect your deposits. I think that the stocks will probably rebound pretty quickly.
It's interesting from the perspective of the average person and how it may in fact impact you. But for those people who are invested with Silicon Valley Bank, if you're a startup and you then get your money back that was put into the bank, where would you go? Like, what would your next move be? What would you do to protect yourself moving forward? Do you just look at a different bank, or what's the move there, do you think?
You might. It depends on the characteristics, though, of the people that were depositing in a bank that was known to be essentially funding internet startups, right? When you're funding startups, you kind of realize that there's going to be much more failure than there is success. So presumably, these are depositors that are willing to take a risk that probably you and I would not. So if this bank goes down, are they going to move into a conventional bank, or are they just going to continue to look around for these types of banks that are willing to fund these high risk endeavors? You know, the downside risk, of course, is significant, but the upside risk is you could be funding the next Uber or Facebook. So I don't think that the profile of the typical depositor with that bank is indicative of Americans in general, and certainly not of Canadians.
How are we doing here in general, in Canada? We talk about this year that we're sort of slightly into recession territory and not. And how are you feeling generally about things north of the border right now?
I'm good. You know, there is the risk that we could have a recession in this country, but I don't think it's going to look like the 20th century variety where you see these big jumps in unemployment and big drops in GDP. 6 months ago, you and I would have been talking about how many help wanted ads were in, you know, shop windows. If there is an economic slowdown coming, then I think the likelier outcome is you just remove those signs. But I don't know that you want to fire your workers if you can avoid it. It was so hard to find them in the first place. Who's to say that they're going to be there in 6 months, or that they're going to be easy to find in 6 months, given how difficult it was to find people in the last 6 months? So it's probably a mild recession. And that probably suggests then that, you know, the Bank of Canada is not going to have to do much more with interest rates in the coming months, and so it'll be just a rough 2023, but not something that we're gonna lose sleep over as an economy.
Good stuff, Moshe. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
Appreciate your input this morning. Moshe Lander is with Concordia University. Coming up to 10:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. We're gonna switch gears after the news. We're gonna talk a little whiskey in this St. Patrick's Day week, but we're going to go to the other side of the border, into Northern Ireland and Belfast, talking to the CEO of McConnell's Irish Whiskey, which is about to become the first distillery open in Belfast proper in decades. An interesting history to this place. We're going to get into that coming up in just a few minutes. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowle.